This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I don't want to get too emotional, but I am. But I'm just so proud of these guys. It's been a crazy year. Guys away from their families, social injustices. Our fans are stuck together. These guys are stuck together.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Good morning, everybody. Are we ready for a big show? What a show. Boy, we have got everything going on this morning on the program. From a guest standpoint, former NFL Executive of the Year. He held titles high up in the organizations in multiple spots around the NFL. Randy Mueller's going to join us coming up here later on in the program. He's going to join us in hour number 4. He's been an NFL executive in New Orleans, in Miami, multiple spots. He's going to drop on by the show hour number 4 to break down the weekend that was week 6 around the NFL. Speaking of, in 20 minutes, Dan Quinn out, Falcons look good. How did that happen? We'll get to that in 20 minutes. In 40 minutes, the Patriots look ghastly, look awful, specifically Cam Newton. What does that mean for the rest of the season? Is Mraz's side of the bet alive and well? Also, in hour number 3, the Steelers, the AFC's new power team, Adam Gase and the Jets, another week, another humiliation. In baseball, we've got our World Series set up. Props to the Rays, props to the Dodgers. We need to go inside both of their weekends and both of their Game 7s. So we'll do that as well. And on Mondays, hat tip to our friend Little Mo, the late great Little Mo, with a momentous Monday. A story in sports that inspires us. All of that is coming up this morning on a Monday show. We are stacked. We are ready to roll. Where are you? But we have so much, so any of those topics or anything from the football weekend. We also had Alabama roaring back against Georgia on Saturday night. We had plenty of interesting things across college football unfold on Saturday. Hit me up on the phones at 855-212-4CBS. Again, 855-212-4227. And hit me up on Twitter all morning long. I'll read through those and read those on the air. DA on CBS. We begin with yesterday's big one. Rodgers v. Brady. Packers v. Bucks. The NFL networks and the league itself wanted to clear the deck late yesterday afternoon. All of the games stacked in the early window. Only one late game going up against Packers and Bucks. That was the dreadful Jets against the Dolphins. So the NFL and the TV networks wanted to make sure all eyeballs were on Rodgers and Brady, understandably so. Little did we know, by the time we got to the end of the third quarter, we would be furiously searching for things on other channels, namely America's Funniest Home Videos last night. Because by the time we got to the end of the third quarter, the Buccaneers had a stranglehold on this game. The fourth was garbage time. And a Green Bay team that I had claimed was the best team in football going into this game had its pride handed right back to them by the Bucs. Aaron Rodgers, who is playing quarterback as well as anybody in football, after a 10-0 start, was a disaster. Multiple interceptions, a pick six, which started the deluge by the Buccaneers. Sacked, rattled. The Packers' offense was a debacle. After 10-0, it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Freaky Friday. Somebody became Jamie Lee Curtis, the other person became Lindsay Lohan, and never the two shall meet again. And for a team like the Packers to have dominated everybody, they had not lost, they had not won a game by less than a touchdown. They were undefeated coming into yesterday. To not only lose, but to come whimpering back to the sideline as though they just had no answers for a Buccaneers team that had just lost to the Bears. I know the Bears' record's good, but let's be honest. The Bears aren't going to be long for January. For a Bucs team that had looked very mortal over the course of the first 5 weeks of the season at times, the Packers had no answers. None. And it made me wonder, were my thoughts that the Packers were the best team in football and others that put the Packers atop the power standings, were the Packers actually just paper champions? It is where we begin. Your cold open.
Here's the snap on 3rd and 6. Lob pass toward the end zone. Gronkowski, he makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. What a great grab by Gronk. Holy Gronkamole.
I think we need to kind of a kick in the ass a little bit as a little bit of a wake up to stop feeling ourselves so much and get back to the things that got us to this position. And I think this would be, unfortunately, but fortunately, something we can really, really grow from.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
I was Gene Deckerhoff, voice of the Buccaneers on Bucs Radio. And that was Aaron Rodgers after the game. Okay, so I'm going to take, first of all, glass half full on the pack. They can't play worse than that. And they actually dominated the early part of the game. And it could have been worse than 10-0. And the pack proved they were ready for the fight on the road in this matchup. So when Rodgers says, you know what? We could use this as a positive. We're not going to be feeling ourselves anymore. We need to be grounded a little bit. Okay. But wouldn't that also include Aaron Rodgers? I mean, Rodgers gets into the end zone, or else he thought he did, and starts doing the Key and Peele McCringleberry pelvis thrust celebration. I mean, if anybody was feeling themselves, it would definitely be Aaron Rodgers. He was doing a pelvis thrust celebration in the first quarter of an NFL game. Look, I liked it. Give me more Key and Peele in my end zone celebrations. But still, I mean, Rodgers is the one that's going to be saying, yeah, you know what, we were feeling ourselves a little bit too much, and this should humble us. We'll get better because of this. We probably got to be reminded we're not that good. I mean, I would specifically point to Aaron Rodgers in terms of that. Number two, a ton of credit goes to the Buccaneers because the defense flipped that game. It wasn't necessarily Tom Brady. It was the Bucs defense which solved Rodgers and that Packers offense real quick. After the first couple of drives, when the Packers went down the field, that pick six changed everything for that game. Everything. And once that happened, it was like the Bucs had life and their defense just started teeing off. And, you know, this was reminiscent of last year's NFC title game, where as soon as the Packers fell behind by a score or two, it was like, okay, we've got nothing. This game is over. We're heading back to the bus. And that worries me about the Packers. They're really good front runners. When things are going well, this includes Aaron Rodgers. And I absolutely love Aaron Rodgers, but this goes to number 12 as well. When things are going well, those guys can sing. I mean, Rodgers specifically throws it anywhere he wants to throw it, looks completely indefensible, and the Packers can be a dominant force. But very obviously, when a good team punches back or a great team punches back, they can go into a hole. They can go into an emotional shell. And I was just thinking early third quarter yesterday how we're all kind of waiting and wanting for Rodgers to put together some type of good drive. I mean, even Buck and Aikman were kind of wanting, longing for Rodgers to make it interesting. He couldn't. And I was just thinking how if the shoe was on the other foot, I mean, Brady just would not have let that get away from them so badly. Brady always, you know, down 14 or down 17, was going to focus and make it the end of the world type of drive. We have to score here. Just to put some pressure on the opposing team and flip it just a little bit. And Rodgers just did it. It was as though Rodgers' soul had been sucked out of his body. And that, to me, is one of the unfortunate truths of Rodgers' career. It is that when he's been great, he's been sublime. I mean, immortal type of great. But when him and the team get behind, it just feels as though all of their energy gets sucked out of the building. And this is not just the last 2 years under Matt LaFleur. This has been a kind of a Packers trend for a long time. And that was what was most disappointing about yesterday. They could have been better than that. They should have been better than that. They are better than that. So are they paper champs? No, I think they're legitimately good. I think, but they ran into a team that punched back and was able to flex their muscle, and they didn't know how to respond. They just didn't know how to respond. And some of Brady's throws yesterday, look, I've taken my shots at 43-year-old Tom Brady. Some of those throws, when the snap is errant in the red zone, it goes low and wide, and Brady has the head about him to keep on the play and to throw a pretty dart for a touchdown. Or the throw to Gronk in the corner of the end zone with a defender draped all over the tight end. Those are just beautiful Hall of Fame throws. Brady was great yesterday when it mattered. Rodgers was not. The Packers shriveled up, and the Bucs defense flexed. That's a big boy win by the Bucs in a big boy way. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Meraz, were you disappointed that once the tide turned against the Packers, they looked so inept? Are you just going to give the credit all to the Bucs for making that happen?
Well, you do have to give the credit to the Bucs, but what really disappointed me was coming out of halftime. When you're down 28-10, that's only an 18-point deficit. The Packers' offense, as they've shown all year, can explode at any turn. And they came out and started that third quarter as if they didn't have a care in the world about coming back in that game. The offense seemed flustered, and I know that Tampa Bay's defense was bringing it. I mean, JPP turning back the clock. But you're only down 18 at half with Aaron Rodgers, and it was as if they had zero halftime adjustment and came out with zero will that they wanted to come back in that game. It was as if they punted on it by halftime. And to me, that's discouraging as a big-time powerhouse team that we were talking about, you know, should be representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. So you get punched in the mouth early, and you can't fight your way back or make anything even competitive, even if you lose the game. To me, that was extremely discouraging from a Packer point of view.
Body language on Rodgers was not good. He was the leader of that. And you're right. I just felt like all of the fight was gone. And it felt very much like the Niners game in the NFC title game last year. Once they got behind, including Rodgers, it was like, okay, not our day. And I know he was in there. He was in the game until the fourth quarter with people finally saying, hey, pull him out of this game. He's getting teed off on. But it wasn't like there was a lot of fire underneath any of the snaps that he took or the throws that he was trying to make. It was like they just got pummeled into submission and they were just going to sleepwalk through the second half of that game. And boy, for what appeared to be the best team in football, I mean, that's not how you fight back against a deficit.
No, it's extremely discouraging. But again, Tampa Bay's defense, man, that's the key, right? Because if Brady could play the way he played yesterday, kind of, you know, mistake-free, and their defense brings the pass rush like that and gets after other quarterbacks. Because their defense, you know, while they played the second half last year, the beginning of this year has been suspect so many times. If they could play like that versus elite quarterback play, now we're talking with having enough behind Brady. As you I've highlighted, the warm bosom of the Patriots could be back for Brady if the defense is bringing that.
Look, if that secondary closes on receivers like they did yesterday, if that pass rush is all over the opposing quarterback like it was yesterday, that Buccaneers team has all the parts it needs. Offensively, they're not always going to be great because we've seen Brady take naps this year. We've seen Brady look very bad, very mediocre against the Saints. He looked very mediocre against the Bears as well. Neither one of those teams is right now a powerhouse. So it's not as though the Bucs can't be kind of riddled themselves. But yesterday the pass rush was devastating. And once Bakhtiari went out, it was all hell breaking loose. It was a fire alarm every single time the Bucs wanted a rush. I mean, every time there was a passing down, the Bucs had three guys in the backfield all over Rodgers, which I think gives me a lot of pause about the Packers, a lot, because from an offensive line standpoint, especially if Bakhtiari is injured, that's a disaster. But number two, it really makes you reassess the Bucs, because then that means they don't need 30 points on the board from Brady. It just means that keep him in a game and the Bucs defense can make things happen. And geez, I mean, it was a fire drill. I mean, how many times in the second half yesterday? I know that they had a big lead, so it's easier to pass rush. But even in the second quarter, it was like you had three guys in the backfield every passing down. I mean, that's very impressive from the Bucs.
Yeah, and let's not forget, this was Packers off a bye as well. That
true.
Extra week of preparation off a bye, and the Bucs made them look like that.
True. It was a weird outcome. I mean, it wasn't like the Buccaneers couldn't win this. It was a pick 'em all week long. And early on in the game, when the Packers are dominating, I'm saying, you see, this is why I was questioning why it was Packers only favored by 1 point. This was so weird to me. It felt like the Packers were the much better team. But clearly Vegas knew that the Bucs defense was going to have a say in this, and the Bucs defense absolutely defined the game. When we come back here on the show, elsewhere in the NFC South, Dan Quinn out and the Falcons rise. How do they look so good after an 0-5 start? We'll discuss next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Mornings are hard. Your sports radio show doesn't have to be.
Ryan under center with an eye behind him. Play fake. Ryan going to slip it back. Wide open is Hurst. 20, 15, 10, 5. And Hayden Hurst will close the show on a 4th and short. Today. Hurst gets his 3rd touchdown catch, and it's a 35-yard throw from Ryan.
I can't worry about where it's been. I just got to worry about where it's going. And next week, we got to prepare ourselves like we did this week to prepare to go 1-0 once again.
Falcons radio on the call as Atlanta soars yesterday without Dan Quinn. Final score, Falcons 40, Vikings 23. Glad you're with us this morning here on the DA Show. Happy Monday to you. It's an Ask the Pros Day, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply tweet at me, DA on CBS. If you're listening later on to the show, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. And remember that the DA Show is available on your smart speaker. So have us on around the house as you get ready for the day. Just tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio. The stats are undeniable. When a team fires its head coach midseason, they get a bounce. We saw this happen with the Texans last week with Romeo Crennel at the helm. You get a bounce. And the Falcons got a big-time bounce yesterday. How about Matt Ryan? I'm chuckling because, damn it, Matt Ryan, where was this in the first 5 weeks of the season? 371, 4 touchdowns, no INTs, a quarterback rating of 136. Julio Jones, 8 grabs, 137, and 2 scores. And the Falcons' offense just was phenomenal. No answers from the Minnesota defense. Now, it is strange in Minnesota to see a Vikings defense coached by Mike Zimmer be this bad, but this has been the way that it's been all season long. You know what's going to be the real sin of this? Is if the Falcons at 0-5 of the season over suddenly turn this thing around and go on a run and finish the season like 9-7. Because it's just going to be a reminder how bad Quinn was and what an anchor around the neck Quinn was of this organization. It's just going to remind you that had you fired Dan Quinn earlier, you did have the pieces, you did have the roster, you did have the talent to compete. This is why I didn't agree with Thomas Dimitroff being fired as well as Quinn. I thought the roster was good enough. I thought the coaching was a disaster. And we just saw this yesterday, that snap your finger and without Dan Quinn on the sideline, suddenly the Falcons become at least a comprehensive professional outfit. That's all. I don't know. The Vikings stink. So maybe just beating the Vikings is not necessarily indicative of being a very good team anyway. But at least they look like a competent professional outfit. That's all we were looking for from the Falcons. You knew they were not 0-5 bad talent-wise. You just knew it. And they weren't 1-7 bad the way that they started last season. They're not that bad of a roster. And all it takes is getting that guy off of the sideline. It was just a stink that had fallen over that sideline, that organization, like a fog descending upon the valley. It just hung over there. Dan Quinn stunk. And we saw it in bright lights yesterday. And you watch, the Falcons aren't going to go 10-6, but, you know, this is probably an 8-8 team now, and they started 0-5. Don't be surprised if they go 7-3 the rest of the way. Don't be surprised. That's absolutely in play. Mraz, I don't know how much of this game you watched because it was up against 10 other games of the early window, and it was two non-playoff teams. But there was just a spark, there was just a life about the Falcons that was so evident from like the opening kickoff yesterday.
Yeah, well, when you have the under, you paid a little more attention to this than you care to admit.
Oh, okay, so you did pay attention.
Yes,
you had a reason
yes,
to pay attention.
Because I thought there would not be a lot of scoring, and unfortunately, I was a little wrong. Yeah, I still a little questioning whether I believe more in the Falcons' defense now that Dan Quinn's out of there or how inept the Vikings really were in this game. But nonetheless, that is a game where the Falcons all year have shown it doesn't matter how bad the team is, they're going to go out there and lay down and die, and Matt Ryan's going to do his best to not be.
And when they had a 23-0 lead, they were going to gag it away, 100%. Which they had done earlier this season.
I think the thing is, it's a little bit of the in-between. I think the Falcons definitely felt a little breath of fresh air, a little more relief, a little more, you know, shot in their arm that Dan Quinn's not holding them back, maybe that they can look the coach in the face and have a little more confidence in him. And I think they also found a team that maybe is more dreadful than them as far as absolutely having no life whatsoever and bailing when the going gets tough, which is exactly what the Vikings did, and finding a quarterback in Kirk Cousins who is just dreadful now and not playing up to it. So I think it was the perfect run-in team for the Falcons to catch to gain a little confidence and feel good about themselves after firing their coach. But you're right, the Falcons have enough talent now where they could build off that. And you never know, this could be a 6-4, 7-3 team the rest of the way just because of talent alone on that roster.
How do you figure Kirk Cousins went to the Superdome and won a playoff game last year? How do you figure?
That has to now be the biggest blemish on Sean Payton's coaching career. It's the only thing that makes any sense because he is so awful, awful. And the Vikings signed this guy basically feeling like their defense would be good enough and they needed something when they got rid of Case Keenum, something to carry them home. And all they are doing is going backwards. Instead of building on a playoff win, they had to let defensive pieces go and they are going backwards in a hurry. And we have a sound check clip coming up in a little while ago. Kirk Cousins even himself talking about he's not going to make it through the year if he keeps playing this way. It's absolutely awful. And don't look now. I know the Jets are really bad and it's going to be hard to top them. The Vikings are very much in this Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes, which is unbelievable to say when they were a Final Four team in the NFC. They stink.
They're in play. I mean, I don't know how you chase down the Jets because the Jets are so ungodly bad. The Jets are bad on every single level. They are bad on offense. They're bad on defense. They're bad on special teams. They're bad in coaching. They're bad at quarterback. They're bad at running back. They're bad at wide receiver. They're bad at secondary. They're bad at pass rush. They're bad at everything. So I don't know how you chase them down because that looks like an 0-16. But boy, if the Vikings finish at 3-13, it would not be that surprising. I know they've had injuries. But, man, is that team just skidding. And Cousins is just a nightmare if he's got to save the team. By the way, the Falcons next up get the Lions. So watch out for a little run here. They get the Lions, the Panthers, the Broncos before a bye. You watch.
Whoa.
We're going to have a 4-5 Falcons team by the bye. Panthers are legit. I mean, the Panthers are a competitive team. But I think the Falcons are either going to be 3-6 or 4-5 by the time their bye rolls around. And you're going to realize just what a disaster it was to have Dan Quinn on the sideline if you're Arthur Blank. Our phone number, if you want to jump in on the NFL action, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227 on Twitter, DA on CBS. So I had a follower named Dennis, a D-alien, tweet at me like 30 times yesterday and late night. So it's one of those types of Twitter accounts, one of those types of listeners. I'm getting tweets about the Rams uniforms, tweets about Jerry Jones hiring Mike McCarthy, tweets about Kalamazoo to Waterloo, tweets about Dave Roberts. So it's just a lot of action late night in my feed. Okay? But the last tweet was a message to AB. Dennis tweets, DA, please pass this on to the Fordham guy. The girls in the household love Andrew. I'm doing my best to tone it down. LOL. That's from Dennis.
All right.
So, Bogues, it sounds like you've got yourself a household that is filled with ladies that really enjoy your vocal stylings.
Yeah, I'm going to need an age check just to make sure we're not stepping into dangerous territories. I do play well with third graders, but I prefer these to be more like college sophomores. But whatever. Here are your headlines, guys.
Here's Andrew.
Hey, Ames, how are you?
That's your wheelhouse, okay? That we just know that that's your preferred target demographic.
It's just legal is really the safest way. It's an all-encompassing title.
21 with a pulse is what Bogus is looking for.
Well, no.
Oh, man.
I get picky after the age. But the age is really the icebreaker there. Your headlines are sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you hundreds on your car insurance. The Houston Astros comeback died in Game 7 with the Rays. The Dodgers, though, alive and well.
First pitch. Fly ball, center field, Bellinger is there, and he's got it! And the Dodgers advance to the World Series for the third time in the past 4 years.
After Boy, trailing 3-1.
Do I owe Dave Roberts an apology? I had him fired on Friday morning.
Mirage, you can't bring him back.
I mean, come on, 8 years, 2 World Series appearances. They're going to lose again to the LCS. Fire Dave Roberts. 3 days later, they're in the World Series.
Yep, they were down 3-1 to the Braves in the series, 2-0 and 3-2 in Game 7 in Arlington last night. That was Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio. It was a 4-3 final over the Braves last night, thanks to Cody Bellinger's tie-breaking solo homer in the 7th. Kike Hernandez's tying pinch-hit solo homer in the 6th. Mookie Betts robbing Freddie Freeman of a homer in the 5th. And the Braves running into a 5-2-5-6 double play in the 4th. Not to mention Julio Urias closing the game with 3 perfect innings. That is the second longest such outing in a do-or-die game in postseason history.
Wow.
Number one is Pedro's epic 6 innings in the 99 ALDS.
Wow.
Cleveland. Game 1 of the World Series is tomorrow night. I assume the Rays were listening to this last night.
We have a lot of work to do, but for the Dodger fans that are here, the ones that aren't here, we love you. We're thinking about you, and this year is our year. This This is our year.
Roberts during the on-field ceremony on Fox. Just a little bulletin board material for the Rays ahead of Game 1 tomorrow. So the last time we saw the Niners, they were losing by 26 at home to the Dolphins last night. Still at home, a 24-16 win over the Rams. George Kittle caught one of Jimmy G's two touchdown passes.
We're not happy with our performance. And so the only thing to do is to go back to work, and that's what we did this week. And you could feel it the whole week. The guys were locked in. We were focused.
And what does it say about the 49ers that through the first 5 weeks, their only wins came against the awful Giants and the disastrous Jets? And then last night against a 4-1 Rams team, they were the better team for 60 minutes. They were the better team for the opening kick right through for 3 hours. It was really never in doubt. That was by far their best game of the season. They looked complete. They looked ready. Garoppolo didn't look like a disaster. You can't tell me that that's just because he has a better ankle now after the high ankle sprain. I mean, Mraz, how do you explain the Niners looking like they're going through the motions for 5 weeks and then suddenly last night against the best opponent they played so far this year, playing their first complete game of the season?
It just shows they go as the quarterback position goes. Because when Nick Mullins was playing well, they were able to beat the bad teams. And when Garoppolo stinks, the Niners have no shot. And when Garoppolo wakes up, he's great. And I hate to like bring it back home and be homerism here. I mean, is there a lot of Eli Manning and Garoppolo where some days he just looks brilliant and some days you look at him and go, what the heck? How is this guy playing quarterback in the NFL? And that's literally how the Niners are going right now.
But Eli was better, though.
Eli was definitely better. But I guess the point remains, though, that when Eli was bad, he was really bad. And when he was good, he was really good. And the Giants, whenever Eli was really good, they'd win. And whenever they lost, you could almost always pinpoint it on him during some of those years. And that's kind of the feel I'm getting with Garoppolo now.
Okay,
he has the ability to look, you know, when he's on, he can look like a top five quarterback. It's just not consistent enough.
Yeah. And when he looks bad, he looks really awful. Remarkably, terribly awful. Bad. Okay, we'll have to track that. The Eli Manning, Jimmy Garoppolo corollary.
And let me correct myself. Jimmy G, 3 touchdown passes last night, not just 2. Mentioned those Dolphins. They blanked the Jets yesterday 24-0. Tua Tagovailoa played the final series, completing both passes he threw in his NFL debut. Gangrene, meanwhile, 0-6, the last unbeaten team left since the Giants fought off the football team 2019, and those Falcons smoked the Vikings.
The last winless team left. The last winless.
Oh, that's winless. Yeah, excuse me.
I mean, to say that the Jets were unbeaten, that was...
They're
undefeated. The undefeated New York Jets roll along at 6-0. By the way, I mean, that was a 24-0 game. It could have been 48-0. That was the Dolphins didn't even play well last night. They did not even play well, and they won by 24 points. It was as though now every team, if the Dolphins can do this, every team is playing a JV team when they play the Jets. Every team knows this is the easiest game and easiest win on our schedule. We don't even have to play our best game to blow them out. I mean, I don't know how you don't fire Adam Gase today, because they're just not competitive, and they're not going to be competitive.
Adam Gase, 40 career losses as a head coach, 30 of them by double digits.
That's an incredible stat. He has lost 30 of 40 games by double digits in a one-score league. Yeah. Let's face it, it doesn't take much to just hang around against bad coaches, bad teams, bad quarterbacks. They're so ungodly bad. I mean, it feels a lot like the 0-16 Browns, a lot like the 0-16 Lions, where there's no hope. And it's just like a clown show that every Sunday you tune in just to see, you know, how bad could it possibly be? And every day, like in the first quarter, it's just the circus tent is on fire already.
And the difference is with those 0-16 teams, they were like fun-loving, and you wanted to kind of root for them to find a way to get a win in December. This Jet team, there's nothing to root for. You just look at Flacco's face now. You look at Gase, and you're like, just lose. Get out of my face.
Yeah, and also, like the 0-16, I'd have to go back and think about who was on that 0-16 Browns team. But the 0-16 Lions team, that was just a bunch of young players that was a mishmash of kind of a bad young team. Dan Orlovsky was the quarterback, and you know they weren't built with veterans. This team is Joe Flacco and Frank Gore. I mean, this is just like, this is the team going 0-16. That's how bad they are. They're once previously good players that are just awful now, absolutely awful.
And let me tack this on to Sean's Gase's record note. It's 15 losses as a Jet head coach, 7 of them by 20 points or more. So, I mean, he's getting – it's even worse as a Jet. Half his losses with them have been by three scores.
Solid.
I mean, if they don't go 0-16, it's kind of a miracle. Like, if they find two wins, it's definitely coach of the year candidate for Adam Gase from here on out, because he would have taken a team that hates his guts to a team that actually wants to play to win two games.
And if I'm the Jets, fire Gase till after the year if you want Trevor Lawrence. Don't do what the Falcons did and give your team life. You might as well just let it die and go
and look,
get
Trevor
Lawrence.
Texans have played well without Bill O'Brien, yeah, too.
Don't even give your team energy. Let them. You're not worried about ticket sales right now. Let them go 0-16 if you're ownership, if you're Joe Douglas. Get Gase out. Get Trevor Lawrence.
Okay, so you're flipping what I just said where you have to fire Adam Gase today. You're flipping that. You're saying you cannot fire Adam Gase today.
Especially because what are you worried about fans with paper bags in that? You have the gift of not happening in your home crowd. I would not fire him. I would let him sit there and die for the last 10 weeks.
So you're the Johnson family, and you're like, you know what? For the next 2.5 months, I'm just going to wait to see how bad we lose every single week. I want this to get grisly. Well,
I'm serious. You're not worried about fans at the stadium. You're not worried about local TV markets. It's all revenue shared anyway. What do you have to lose? Your team's not going anywhere. Don't even give them life. Trevor Lawrence is there. Let Adam Gase sit there and suffer and wallow. Let the team stink and start anew next year.
It's just that you have to endure being a total punchline for 2 months.
Who cares? You've been a punchline for 40 years.
The Steelers embarrassed the Browns yesterday 38-7. The Ravens held off the Eagles 30-28. The Broncos a surprising 18-12 win at Foxborough, and the Titans outscored the Texans 42-36 in overtime. Derrick Henry a game-ending 5-yard run after Tennessee got even with 4 seconds left in regulation. Tonight, of course, we've got the Bills and the Chiefs, and then the Cowboys and Cardinals in the usual Monday night slot. Clemson and Alabama stay firmly atop the AP College Football Top 25. Notre Dame and Georgia flip at 3-4 after the Irish fought off Louisville and the Bulldogs lost.
Georgia only fell to 4?
Yeah, because North Carolina lost. Wow. And somebody else lost, I feel like, in that 5-10 range. Jeez. But yeah, and then Ohio State, who still hasn't played a game yet, moves up to number 5 right behind those
Man.
Four.
I mean, I know they had a good first half, but I thought they were going to drop out of the top 5. Wow. They dropped one spot? Man.
One spot, yeah. Jeez. And MLS last night, a productive win for Toronto FC. The 1-0 final over Atlanta extends their unbeaten streak to 9 matches and a clinch playoff spot for the Columbus Crew and Orlando City. DA, back to you.
Good to be an SEC team. I mean, you get shut out in the second half, you throw 3 interceptions, and you drop one spot in the rankings. When we come back here on the show, what has happened to the New England Patriots? I kept waiting yesterday for the pass to turn it on, and they never did. Did they just lose to Vic Fangio at home? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's going to be a good day with DA.
4th and 10. They've got to reach the Bronco 14. 24-yard line of scrimmage. Same set. See if Denver brings some pressure. They do. Safety blitz on the way. Newton in the pocket. Hit as he throws. Loads it up, and it's incomplete. Denver's defense with a huge stop. Receiver was open, N'Keal Henry.
Well, it was a big challenge. You know, playing without guys, getting guys hurt, moving around. There's some guys that, you know, haven't played together much, haven't practiced together much. So we need to get on the field. We need to practice. We need to develop some continuity as a team.
Whoa. For the first time in 20 years, it sounds like Bill Belichick had an excuse. That the guys that were out for COVID created a, quote, big challenge. Oh, wow. Doing More is sponsored by the Home Depot. With help from the Home Depot, you can take on fall projects without even leaving your own backyard. Download the Home Depot mobile app today. Search, shop, and more. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. How about Mraz's favorite baseball team, the Tampa Bay Rays, facing a scare from the Astros? They were up 3-0 in the series. They fell to a game 7, losing 3 straight, but then pulled out game 7 on Saturday night. On to the World Series, date with the Dodgers. The legendary Randy Arozarena captured series MVP honors. He was amazing, the first rookie position player to do so. 7 home runs in the postseason, 7. The 0-4 Yankees remain the only team to blow a 3-0 series lead. Isn't that a shame? Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, sponsored by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. That play-by-play call was Broncos radio. Every time yesterday, it felt like, oh, here is where the Broncos blow this. This is where the Patriots go right down the field, score a quick touchdown, get the ball back, score again, and win. It just never came to fruition, and I was waiting for it to happen. It looked like by the end of the game, it was going to happen. It looked obvious by the end of the game it would happen. The Broncos kept settling for field goals, which is something you absolutely cannot do in Foxborough. And every time they settled for a field goal, I said, that's another bullet into your own foot. You've just shot yourself in the foot. Again, you can't settle for the field goals here in Foxborough. And then once they were only up by one score late, I said, this is, again, you've set yourself up for disaster. This was a horror movie that we all know how it ends. You're an overmatched team, a mediocre team. You go on the road to Foxborough, and what you do is you settle for field goals. You let the Patriots hang around. It's a one-score game late. You have a bad turnover, which flips the field, which is exactly what happened. And you end up letting the Patriots score a late touchdown, and New England walks out of the building with a win, even though they didn't play their best football game. And the Pats could not take advantage. They could not take advantage. And the final score, the Broncos all on field goals, 18-12. And Cam Newton wasn't bad. He was really bad. He threw for 157 yards, no touchdowns, two interceptions. He had the one quarterback sneak for the score. But through the air, Cam was terrible. He was sacked four times, the two interceptions. He ran the football okay, but, I mean, through the air, he was really, really atrocious. And the Patriots' offense was a nightmare. Outside of Cam Newton running for 76 yards, no Patriot running back had more than 19 on the ground. Now think about that. That the Patriots, their leading rusher was Cam at 76 yards. Their next leading rusher was Damian Harris at 19 yards. It was, and I know that the Broncos defense can be good, but this was ugly. And this is the first time since 2002. Okay, so this is the year after they win their first Super Bowl. This is year two of Brady as a starter. This is the first time since 2002. This late in the season, the Patriots were sub 500. And that tells you something that we touched on last week. Playing in a garbage division helped the Patriots more than they will ever admit and Patriots fans will ever admit over the course of their dynasty. Because early on in the season, they never had to worry about falling behind under 500 and needing to chase down a division leader. They always could fatten up, even if they didn't play great. Remember, a lot of the years that the Patriots and Brady really had it humming, they would kind of figure out what they wanted to be in the first month of the season. They could afford to take a loss opening weekend, a couple of losses in September. They always knew by this point of the season, they would be above 500 and then just coast and take off, and they had figured out who they were. This is the first time since 2002 they're under 500. First time in nearly 20 years, they're under 500 this late in the season. The Patriots looked awful yesterday, and Mraz's bet of them being a bottom three team is actually still alive. Who would have ever thought after their opening 3 weeks? It's actually still alive.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.